It's the first Sunday of February at the Holy Trinity Church, Dalston, and the practitioners of an ancient craft gather in remembrance of the founding father of their art.
To be able to laugh about the joys and the sorrows of life is something we all appreciate, and our prayer is that sons everywhere may help us to do this in a Christian spirit.
It's an occasion of suitable solemnity.
Can we have a nice big drum roll, please? Ladies and gentlemen, can we have a big, big round of applause for the best drummer today?
This is the Grimaldi Service, at which Clowns International, the oldest clown confederation in the world, pays tribute to the originator of British clowning, Joseph Grimaldi. The congregation is made up of row upon row of clowns in full motley and makeup. In the past, I've been amongst them in my own clown role of Uncle Taco. But this is a program about clowning today. In the teeth of a recession, is there still a meaningful role for those of us who clown around professionally, or are we just an embarrassing and even frightening anachronism? I'm going to talk to other practitioners about the realities of clowning in 21st century Britain. Until recently, the traditional domain of the clown has been the circus ring. So I started my investigations by meeting up with Alan Digweed, who's recently returned from performing solo as Tweedy the Clown for crowds of 10,000 a night in America. Now, he's back in Britain, preparing for the summer season with Gifford Circus.
We're in Tweedy's mother-in-law's front room, and Tweedy's sat here with short, dark hair, a bright red bubble on the front. His hair's dyed brilliant red on the front. It says you're a clown from a mile off. And as a clown, what skills do you actually perform?
I do lots of things badly. I juggle a bit, I unicycle a bit, I play lots of instruments not very well. I do vaulting on and off a horse and standing on the back of a horse.
So how did you get to the point of deciding to be a clown?
I was going to go to art school to study animation because I love cartoons. And I had this sudden realization that actually I wanted to be a cartoon. I didn't want to make them. I wanted to be a circus clown. It was like, that's what I'm here for.
How do you become that clown, that character? Does the makeup do that? Is it the costume that does that? How do you go from Alan to Tweedy?
It's the physicality of it with the clown. It's the whole body language. A lot of people think of clowns, obviously, with the red nose. But anyone can do that, and so many people do. I think that's why there's so many people that say, oh, I don't like clowns, or I find clowns scary, or, you know, I can't just put on a doctor's outfit and grab a scalpel and say, I'm a doctor, and start cutting someone open because I've got a white coat on. My way of clowning, there's a very anarchic sense to it. There's chaos in the comedy. There's an emotional connection there between yourself and the audience. I use the audience a lot. I'll be in among the audience. It definitely creates lifelong memories.
I was performing once on Brighton Palace Pier, and there was an old lady sitting on a bench, and it was about our third season performing as the Pierrots. And she went, oh, hello, boys. Nice to see you again. I said, oh, thank you very much, madam. When did you see us? She said, well, last year. I said, oh, was it the year before? No. When was it then? 1937, love. I think maybe there's something in clowning that actually touches onto something that's quite timeless as well.
Yeah, I think so. They will always remember.
In a circus, when something goes wrong and someone falls off the wire, the clowns are sent in to kind of distract and cope with the blood on the floor or whatever. And in a way, that could be said to be true about the wider world, that clowns are sent in when there's a crisis.
There was one time I couldn't help but smirk, though, because this guy, sadly, he fell off the trapeze, and he was quite badly injured, and he got stretchered off. So we were sent in, and we did this boxing routine, and it wasn't till we got near the end I suddenly realised the payoff was me being stretchered off to Another One Bites the Dust. I couldn't help but think, oh dear, this may be a bit tasteless. People, they like to see other people failing in a way.
But clowning can surely do more than divert us from a crisis. or play those familiar roles of cheap children's entertainment, tacky burger mascots, or the bad guys in schlock horror movies. The roots of clowning stretch back into the shamanistic rituals of ancient civilization, providing a portal to the weird and even spiritual. My quest took me to meet someone who combines his comic red nose with the daily dog collar of a vicar.
We're in the middle of the Mendips at a place called Wookie Hole, which is near Cheddar Gorge, and I'm standing in the middle of the Clown Museum with the Reverend Rowley Bain, otherwise known as Rowley the Clown. And what an amazing place. We've got costumes, models, props, and these glass cases of eggs.
Well, there's a whole tradition for clowns. It's a kind of copyright thing. So once you have your face on one of these eggs, nobody else can copy it. But it's quite nice that they're quite so fragile, because I think clowns are very fragile, which is what gives them their power.
And I can see mine up there, my Uncle Taco face, as my Pierrot character.
Nobody else can copy that now.
Let's hope not. I'd have something to say if they did. So did you train to be a clown and then apply it to your ministry?
I've always seen clowning as my way of being a priest. So all my clowning is some Christian story or punchline. I walk on a rope, what they call a slack rope, it's like a tight rope but loose. A clown can only preach the gospel as a clown can. So I use circus and story and slapstick. And it's the clown as the jester, the truth teller, the one who's allowed to speak the truth and get away with it. I've custard pied 10 bishops. But that's all in a part of bringing the mighty down from their seats and exalting the humble and meek.
So clowning's a vocation?
Oh, very much so, I think. I mean, it's the whole thing of clown as mirror, the clown who's the mediator between man and the gods and vice versa. And I think that's true in lots of ages and cultures, and I've seen it at work. The Red Indians used to have the witch doctors were their clowns. So it was using all sorts of ridiculous things to cope with the things that they couldn't quite understand. I mean, it's no good having happy, happy clowns, a bit like happy, happy Christians. They're not much use to anybody. Because the best clowns and the best Christians, really, are those who are well acquainted both with comedy and tragedy, death and resurrection. So there's a depth, a mystery to clowns that allows them to speak of the things of God, really, in all sorts of ways.
Clearly you would do the kinds of activities you've talked about as a performer, but what about more serious events like funerals?
I've taken a funerals as a clown as well. I did one at Bath Abbey last year. And I was waiting at the gates to bring the coffin down the aisle with my feather duster, very ceremoniously, and an old couple beckoned me at the door, and I thought, oh dear, someone's going to complain. So they came over and said, are you Rowley? I said, yes. They said, you took my brother's funeral. It was lovely.
One of the great things about a clown is that it restores you to some sort of innocence. Performers for whom I have an enormous affection, partly because my great-grandfather was a clown in the Danish circus and graduated to being a ringmaster, which seems like progress, probably.
Simon Callow's ancestral heritage may lie in the circus, which is looked upon as a low-brow art form. But he's made a lifelong study of the traditions and customs of European performance, and found that clowning has an integral part to play in the function of so-called legitimate theatre.
The central tradition is the fool as the afflicted one, as someone who has been damaged in some kind of way. Very often they were deformed or perhaps slightly idiotic. According to the research, very interestingly, many clowns were in fact spoiled clergymen. The fool was there partly to entertain, was given license. That's the aspect of the clown and the fool that Shakespeare draws on most strongly in King Lear, of course, but also as tokens of good luck, because all the misfortune had been heaped on their head and sort of siphoned it off out of the universe, and so you were thought to be lucky to be around such a person.
And you're describing a kind of spiritual route of clowning that isn't anything to do with makeup, it's nothing to do with costume, it's to do with an attitude to the world and a kind of outsider's role.
It is, although the costume almost always emphasises oddity of some kind, so the clown normally has enormously large feet, or doesn't really fit into his clothes, and he normally looks as if a hod of bricks has just fallen on his head. There's some kind of lowest common denominator about a clown who is a creature of appetites, which are almost beyond his control, and self-obsessed. This baffled but arrogant dreamer who is innocent in many ways and quite malevolent in other ways, and deeply in need of company and equally full of contempt for the people who are his friends. We all recognize ourselves in that person. The clown is every man. It's us. That's all of us up there.
Thank you.
Wow, what a fanfare.
Thank you very much.
We're in a kitchen overlooking open fields just outside Portsmouth with Palfy, the laughologist.
Dr. Palfy, consultant laughologist.
I see. And what exactly is a consultant laughologist?
Well, I can fix your life. Does your life need repairing? That's the question.
I suspect all our lives need repairing. So how do you know someone...
Excuse me, I'm just going to blow my nose. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Feeling better?
Yeah.
Oh, good. When you perform as Dr. Palfy, the laughologist, you obviously play the trumpet.
And the trombone, and the bass drum, and I play with the Ouija board as well. You know, I'm a surrealist anyway. Always have been. You know, reality. What a concept.
How does that go down with your audiences?
When I'm performing, people can throw the most negative stuff at me, and I just turn it into positive without even thinking about it. You know, if I could apply that to my daily life, you know. In fact, a therapist I was seeing one time, she had seen my show in the afternoon. She said, you know, you've sat here and sighed every 10 seconds talking to me. Out there on the street, you were totally in control of the environment, you know.
The context in which you present things can also make things seem very serious. Have you been in situations that aren't just kind of festivals and parties and...
Yeah, I did shows for people in Croatia during the war. Did it in refugee camps and in schools that were all shot up and villages that were 80% artilleryed out, you know. Vietnam, too. I clowned for orphans in Vietnam when I was a medic over there in the 60s, late 60s.
How did people react to you when they're in those traumatic circumstances?
They love it. Everybody needs a laugh.
When I've watched you, the excitement actually is a sense of danger.
I'm pretty safe, though. I would never hurt anybody, although at Glastonbury, I poured a bottle of rum over a guy's head one night who went to sleep in the audience. And he got up swinging at me, but it really did shock the audience. Sometimes I push it too far. But if you don't go out on the end of the branch to get the sweet fruit, you know, you're not going to get it. And sometimes the branch breaks off.
When you perform at a festival, what actually do you do and how does it fit into the overall context?
Well, generally I'm booked to do a 40-minute children's show, which consists of me attempting to do very stupid things like inflate the world's largest balloon. I attempt to drink a glass of water. I have a Mexican jumping flea. I build up an audience to form the Palfy Laugh Harmonic Orchestra. And then I might do walkabouts as well with a clown friend, Nikki, better known as Nurse Narcissus. I walk around in a nightdress talking to a banana.
Well, it just so happens that next to us here we have Nurse Narcissus. How is the experience of clowning with Dr. Palfy for you, Nurse?
A lot of my role is actually just to prevent people really thinking that Dr. Palfy is ill. If you have a really silly, tall-looking lady who's wearing enormous batwing glasses and looking really, really annoyed, it's much more obviously funny. Then you can laugh at the guy in the nightie.
What do you think audiences take from a clowning performance or from your clowning performance?
I think what's really nice, this, particularly with street shows, is when people, they see a street show and the kids want to stop and the parents are carrying their shopping and they warily stop for a little while. And you can see them sort of going, oh, I don't really want to be here. I wish we hadn't seen you guys. And to see that change to their shopping's now on the ground and they're laughing with the kids, that's a lovely moment to sort of see that change.
Well, there are a lot of people who are actually frightened of clowns, too. Some clowns are just horrible makeup and horrible clashing stripes and polka dots.
You don't need to have bad fashion sense to be a clown. You just need to be funny.
Do you think the legislation to do with child protection and people's sensitivities around children and adults in public spaces, has that had an impact on the kind of work either that you do or that you see?
Just made me more self-conscious of, like, dare I shake that child's hand? In fact, most of the time I forget about it and behave just like I did 40 years ago.
Do you have to do a risk assessment as well for your work?
I did this year for the first time.
Risk assessments are fun. We love those. Because it's things like, okay, stunt, blowing up world's largest balloon, potential risk, death by latex allergy, chances of that happening, very slim. Actually, it's nearly a joke in itself for us just to work all that out.
It's hard to imagine the kind of risk assessment that Jo Wilding might have needed to fill out when she took a troop of clowns to Iraq just months after the invasion. Her online blog of experiences has now been published in a book, Don't Shoot the Clowns.
I started doing cartwheels, inciting the kids to try. Some of them picked it up straight away. Others just enjoyed flinging themselves about. This was something new and exciting. One of the boys wore a baseball cap to partly conceal burns to his face and a damaged eye from the bombing.
I think clowning probably was a suitably crazy response to a crazy situation. There was one woman we met who I asked her what life was like. She pointed at a pile of flying crusted animal poo in the corner and said, it's like that. Everybody was so weighed down by what they'd been through, the years of war, the years of sanctions, the years of dictatorship. And that was something that we could bring, that playfulness and silliness and childishness.
Pete stepped in with his solo juggling act, balancing Joe, the stuffed clown, on a pole on his nose. He chatted away in a mixture of English and gibberish, and the children laughed at the sound of it, even if it didn't make any sense.
We performed in all sorts of places, schools, squatter camps, orphanages. We would turn up and get into costume, and the first thing we did was this sort of shouting where we were shouting, whoa, and boom chucka, and getting the kids to yell it back at us. And they would start to just laugh as if they hadn't laughed for such a long time. But it wasn't just the kids, it was the grown-ups as well. You'd see the weight kind of lift off them. I remember seeing two grown men hugging each other at the side of one of our shows. Before they saw the show, the children used to draw pictures of tanks. And I remember the children across the street from us playing hostage-taking. And their whole heads were filled with this incredibly violent imagery. And then after the show, they'd be playing clowns. And they'd be drawing clowns and magicians. I'm not a professional clown. I'm now a barrister. I'd set up the circus and I was just going to administer and organise. And Amber, the first one who turned up, brought a spare set of stilts and taught me to walk on them in our living room. So I got the tailor down the road to make me this pair of extra long trousers and I ran away with the circus.
I didn't choose clowning. Clowning chose me. I remember the first time I ever put on the outfit thinking, wow, this is such an amazing thing to do.
The compelling power of the clown costume, or motley, is truly transformative. Matty Faint, like most clown acts today, still finds the majority of his work at children's parties and corporate promotions. He's carved a career from this for 40 years as his alter ego, Matty the Clown.
The main market for most clowns are the children's party. You go to somebody's house and you perform for 2 hours and do a magic show and lots of party games and pass the parcel. Clowns tend to work very much on the moment. You really can't have a script with children because they would destroy it.
Why are you wearing that? What are you doing that for? Why are you doing things like that?
It's the first time children have ever seen a performance quite often, and it's really important that that performance should be really strong, because the last thing you want to hear from a child is, you're rubbish, you're terrible. Which of course I've never had.
Grimaldi, look, Mr. Grimaldi. You know, old clowns never die. Do you know that? They just go, Grimaldi.
Something that started to happen more recently is because of the recession, haggling over the price. How much do you charge for 2 hours? And you say, oh, goodness, you're expensive, which I'm not. How much are you for an hour? And they said, well, actually, we only really want you for a 15-minute show. Sadly, the business of clowning is changing. At one time, you used to go to big store openings in the heyday, where there was lots of work around. Shopping centres don't seem to have clowns that often anymore. I used to work at Canary Wharf over Christmas, strolling up and down, entertaining Santa queues. But now they've changed it to elves, because they're cheaper. And I'm not an elf yet. and maybe a Santa next year, actually, because there seems to be work in Santas.
Now that some sad things known to man, there ain't too much sadder than the tears of a clown when there's no one around.
If Matty's right and the Santa Claus and Father Christmas brands are encroaching on the territory of clown, then the recession must surely be having a devastating impact on the industry. I went to see Gordon Sharp, the chair of Clowns International, who's worked for many years as Rainbow in the double act Sunny and Rainbow. I met him at work, but he wasn't at a kid's party or a circus booking. He was dressed in overalls in the middle of some building work.
Never fits, does it?
Rainbow, we're in someone's front kitchen and you're surrounded by wood, materials, tools, and you're covered in plaster dust. Why is that?
Well, because I'm here decorating. It's off-season for me at the moment, so you've got to keep going, haven't you? And, of course, as you can see, I'm not that wonderful clown with the makeup and clean and tidy. I'm covered in filler and paint, dust all over my hair, unshaven, and probably a bit smelly.
And you fill in your work as a clown as a builder, decorator, plumber, or do you fill in your work as a builder, decorator and plumber as a clown?
I try and do the clowning. Obviously, if the clowning is very quiet, I would do a lot more of this.
Where do you actually get to perform your stuff?
We go all around the place. We go from a birthday party in a front room to a hall, weddings, street entertainment, not many shopping malls because of stupid health and safety they've got these days.
Have you noticed any significant impact of the recession on the kind of work that you've had to do?
I have noticed several agents that I used to do a lot of work for are now ringing up once a year rather than seven times a year.
Are you having to change the kinds of performances that you give and the context that you're performing in?
Yes, I am. Only last week I did a stilt walking job, no makeup on, and giving out leaflets. In fact, I just presented the agent with a new costume. It's all done with newspaper print. The slogan, if you like, is Rise Above Them, Leaflet to Me. I found it degrading to be going out stilt walking as a clown in the makeup, giving out balloons or leaflets, because to me it was not right. So I don't enjoy it, but it's another job. It gives me money.
I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down.
Well, if clowns are indeed bouncing back in spite of it all, where better to see it than Bristol's Circa Media? It's one of only a handful of circus schools in the country.
We've been learning to fall over.
Yeah.
People like it when people get hurt, tripping over, getting accidentally whacked with things. People like that, don't they?
It's people who are just failures, really. But they're always trying hard. They're always really super keen. But they never really get it. They don't really...
Either because they're stupid or naive.
What do your friends say when you go back and you say, I'm at clown school? Do they think it's ridiculous? Are they
oh, they start
you,
that. They
You
they
get ridiculed, yeah. But that's kind of the point. So
when you tell them you've spent half an hour learning how to fall over properly.
You spend half an hour running into a wall.
Yeah.
They don't realise how difficult it is.
Bim Mason is the course director of physical theatre at Circa Media, training young people in the art of clowning. But how do you teach someone to be funny?
Good question. I will see teaching clowning, learning clowning, as a means to an end. It's a way for people to learn to laugh at themselves. So you base it on who they are, their real personalities and their real bodies. What I try to do is get them easy with their imperfections. I'll try and pick up on something that's very characteristic and try to exaggerate it and get them to exaggerate it until it's a stupidity and a ridiculousness, but it's one that they can identify with. It's come out of them. Take myself, I have flat feet, so I made a whole show about my feet, displaying them, celebrating them.
What are the prospects for your clown students when they leave Circa Media?
Oddly, they're not bad, actually. And in a way, you'd think the recession's not a good time. A lot of the work they might go into, some of the street theatre, those festivals may not be happening because councils can't afford them, things like that. But of course, in times of depression, recession, people like to laugh. It becomes even more important to lift spirits.
They need bread and circuses, don't they?
Well, they certainly need bread, anyway. Let's get our priorities right. They will go into cabaret and little acts. They might work in a duo or a trio, a skill-based thing. They might do some street theatre walkabout and be quite mobile. There is the prospect, of course, of doing quite commercial work. If you can make people laugh, you're well wanted.
Everyone's got a clown in them because everyone's naive in some shape or form. And all you do as a clown is embrace that particular area and just explore it a bit.
Tap into your inner clown.
Yeah.
Tap in.
The future of British clowning is ultimately in these young people's hands. But in a world constrained by cutbacks, besieged by digital media and consumed by cynicism, what possible opportunities are there for the more spiritual or healing functions of a clown? There's a growing arts in health movement in Britain, and on an afternoon at Addenbrooke's Hospital, Cambridge, Dr. Kanga and Dr. Wonderpants of the Theodora Trust take their medication of laughter and nonsense to sick children.
Head, shoulders, cheese on toast. I'm Sarah Kashar, and I'm the director for Theodora Children's Trust. We send clown doctors to children in hospital every week, and they just bring a little laughter into the hospital ward. I think the children get to forget where they are and why they're here for a few moments. They just get to reconnect with a normal childhood.
Oh, it's fun for us because it's been a tough couple of days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been very tough to see him so happy. It's made us laugh.
We're the few people that see the child. We don't see the illness, we don't see the equipment, we don't see any of that going on. We just see the 5-year-old or the 10-year-old. So we try to remind them that they're still five, and I get to do that permanently.
I think being silly can be such a massively important yet overlooked thing in life. I find it really poignant, and it really is quite a beautiful thing.
I believe that clowns can point the way towards profound human aspirations and beliefs. They're guides, whose differences of physicality, costume and attitude allow us to reflect and comment upon our world. Clowns and clowning are essential to our humanity, a legitimate art form and a precious gift. In the end, being silly is a serious art. Goodbye.